Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise and get straight to the insights that truly matter. Imagine, if you will, India in 2025. It's a nation brimming with this palpable sense of forward momentum. People often describe it as scripting a whole new chapter in global development. It really is a vibrant picture, isn't it? Ambition meeting massive scale execution, from, you know, bustling cities to genuinely groundbreaking infrastructure. Our deep dive today is built on, well, quite a stack of incredible sources. We've got everything from official government reports looking at mega projects, renewable energy, economic performance that's from Invest India and the Press Information Bureau, or PIB. Then there's detailed analysis on India's surging foreign exchange reserves. We're also looking at some really in-depth insights into the India-Japan partnerships and, crucially, a focused examination of India's demographic dividends, skill development, and the absolute critical semiconductor sector. For that, we're drawing from key initiatives like DD Jushiwai, the NSDC, and strategic think tanks like Cianjo Anyos.
So our mission today is to unpack the intricate layers of India's rapid transformation. We're asking, how is this ancient nation, through this unprecedented surge in economic growth, infrastructure development, and strategic high-tech partnerships, particularly with Japan, how is it fundamentally redefining its global standing? And how is it shaping the future of international trade and innovation? We'll explore how all these elements are kind of converging, and ultimately, what these profound shifts mean for you, the global citizen and astute observer. Let's kick off with the big picture, shall we? Because the macroeconomic indicators coming out of India right now, well, they aren't just impressive. They seem to be signaling a pretty foundational shift. We're talking about a projected 6.5% GDP growth for 2024-25. That positions India as the fastest growing major economy globally. And the Reserve Bank of India, the RBI, they expect this robust growth to continue well into 2025-26. But it's not just growth, right? There's this remarkable stability emerging too. Inflation, for example, has eased quite a bit.
Down to 2.82% in May 2025. That's its lowest since, what, early 2019. So what's the real story behind this strong growth and easing inflation? What does it tell us about India's economic resilience, especially in today's, well, volatile global market?
That really is the crucial point. It's the combination of high growth and relatively low inflation that's sending such a powerful signal. And this stability, it isn't accidental. It's definitely attracting a surge of investment, both domestic and foreign. I mean, just consider this. Retail investors have nearly tripled since 2019. You went from 49 million to 132 million by the end of 2024. That's huge. And IPOs, initial public offerings, the money raised there nearly tripled just between April and December 2024, pulled in a massive 1.54 trillion Indian rupees. That's what, roughly 18.5 billion US dollars. And get this, that gave India a staggering 30% of global IPO listings in 2024. This isn't just numbers on a page. It's about deep structural confidence building up both inside and outside the country. And you absolutely see that confidence reflected in India's financial fortification, those foreign exchange reserves. They surged to $653.97 billion by March 2025. They even peaked higher, over $700 billion last September. Now, to put that in perspective, that's enough cash to cover over 10 months of imports. That provides a critical buffer against any external economic shocks.
This financial strength naturally boosts the rupee, it improves sovereign credit ratings, and it gives the RBI much greater flexibility in its monetary policy. And all of this translates into significant foreign direct investment, FDI. Inflows hit $81.04 billion in the last fiscal year. That's a 14% increase. So yeah, you're seeing a truly robust and resilient economy taking shape that's inspiring trust from investors all around the world.
That is a really compelling economic picture. Okay, so from these broad macroeconomic numbers, let's now look at the very tangible things, the massive projects literally reshaping the country's physical landscape. India is undertaking this ambitious suite of mega projects, and they're not just isolated ventures, are they? It seems like an integrated effort to build a modern, resilient nation. The goal, as I understand it, is to integrate economic engines, slash logistics costs, accelerate urbanization, and really pull in manufacturing investment. And the core of this, you mentioned this ambitious effort, is the PM Gati Shakti Master Plan, launched back in 2021. Now, this sounds like an incredibly sophisticated coordinating effort. Historically, though, large-scale projects, well, anywhere really, they face significant challenges, delays, cost overruns. What are some of the potential pitfalls this Gati Shakti plan is designed to proactively avoid? And I guess, how effective has it actually been so far?
Yeah, the PM Gati Shakti plan is designed to tackle exactly those historical challenges you mentioned. You know, the delays, the cost overruns, the lack of coordination between different ministries. It happens all the time. So Gati Shakti acts as a single digital interface. It brings together 44 central ministries and all 36 states and union territories. And it integrates over 1,650 data layers. The idea is to optimize infrastructure planning from the get-go. It's about having this holistic view, right? Preventing projects from being developed in silos, disconnected from everything else. The sheer scale of what's being integrated here is, well, it's fascinating. Take, for example, the Bharatmala Pariyojana. It's one of India's largest ever road development programs. Phase I alone aimed for 34,800 kilometers of new national highways. The investment by 2024 was over 4.7 trillion Indian rupees. That's roughly 57 billion US dollars. And already nearly 20,000 kilometers have been constructed. But see, this isn't just about pouring asphalt. It's about creating integrated economic corridors and logistics parks, making it easier and cheaper to move goods.
Then you've got the Digital Highways Initiative.
This is where the National Highways Authority of India, NHAI, is laying down 10,000 kilometers of optic fiber cable infrastructure along major routes. Think Delhi-Mumbai Expressway, Hyderabad-Bengaluru corridor. The goal here is bringing high-speed 5G, even 6G connectivity to rural areas, and also supporting future tech, like, you know, connected vehicles. And these projects are genuinely transformative. Look at the Delhi-Mumbai Expressway. It's a colossal 1,386-kilometer eight-lane highway, expected to be fully complete by October 2025. That alone will cut travel time between the two cities by nearly 50%. Imagine the impact on logistics, on business, even personal travel. It's huge. Then in railways, there's the Western Dedicated Freight Corridor, the WDFC. That's a 1,506-kilometer freight-only railway line. It's already over 96% operational as of May 2025. And it's specifically designed to decongest the passenger networks, allowing faster, more reliable movement of goods across the country. High-speed rail is also making serious strides. The Mumbai-Ahmedabad project, that's 508 kilometers, it's under execution right now with crucial technical and financial help from Japan.
The aim is speeds over 320 kilometers per hour. Land acquisition is complete, most civil contracts awarded. Over 78,000 crore rupees, about $9.4 billion USD already spent by June 2025. So real progress. And looking skyward, India's aviation sector is booming too, with major new airport projects. Both the Noida International Airport near Delhi and the Navi Mumbai International Airport are expected to be operational by the end of 2025. They're poised to handle that rising air traffic demand. And finally, let's not forget the ports. The recently approved Vadhavan Port, it's a deep water project, massive outlay of 76,200 crore rupees, roughly $9.2 billion USD slated for completion by 2030. It'll handle the ultra-large container ships, and importantly, it's explicitly designed to integrate with that PM Giti Shakti master plan. So you see, these projects demonstrate a truly holistic approach to nation building. It's all connected, reducing costs, accelerating growth.
That is an enormous undertaking on the infrastructure front, just staggering scale. But it's not just about physical connectivity, is it? It's also about this fundamental shift in how India powers itself. We're seeing this incredibly ambitious target, achieving 500 gigawatts of non-fossil fuel-based energy capacity by 2030. Now, for our listeners, can you maybe put that 500 gigawatt target into perspective? Just how big is that? And what are the biggest hurdles to achieving something on that scale? What gives you confidence India can actually meet it?
Well, 500 gigawatts is. It's monumental. To give you a sense, that's roughly equivalent to the entire electricity grid of a major industrial nation like, say, Germany or Japan. It's huge. The biggest hurdles, definitely things like land acquisition, grid integration, which is technically complex, and of course, financing, given the sheer volume of projects needed. However, what gives real confidence is the pace of current deployment. 2024 was a record-breaking year. India added 24.5 GW of solar capacity and 3.4 GW of wind capacity. That's a twofold increase in solar installations just from 2023. And India's total non-fossil fuel capacity already stands at an impressive 217.62 GW as of January 2025. So, you know, they're already nearly halfway there, which is remarkable progress. A prime example of the scale we're talking about is the Kavda Renewable Energy Park in Gujarat. It's set to become the world's largest solar park. It spans over 72,600 hectares. I mean, that's larger than Singapore. It's projected to generate 473 million units of electricity in its first year alone and expected to be operational by the end of 2025. But this isn't just about massive industrial scale change. It's also impacting individuals directly. Look at the PM Suryagar, Mufindili Yojana. It's a rooftop solar scheme. Launched in the 2024, it facilitated 700,000 rooftop solar installations within just 10 months. That's reaching ordinary homes. So this rapid energy transition, it's really a dual strategy, isn't it? It aligns with India's climate goals, naturally, but it also simultaneously strengthens its energy security. And it positions India as a genuine global leader in clean energy.
That does sound like a remarkable energy revolution happening right now. Okay, let's pivot. Let's talk about perhaps the most critical component of India's future. It's people. All these mega projects, all these economic shifts, they require a massive skilled workforce. And India possesses this unique advantage, the demographics. India was expected to become the world's youngest country by 2020, average age of 29, accounting for around 28% of the entire world's workforce. Can you elaborate a bit on what a demographic dividend truly means for a nation like India, and how this youth bulge can actually translate into economic power? It's not automatic, is it?
No, it's definitely not automatic. A demographic dividend essentially refers to a period when a large proportion of a country's population is of working age. This leads to potentially higher workforce participation and lower dependency ratios, fewer very young and very old people relative to workers. For India, this means a massive pool of young potential workers. If they are properly skilled, they can drive innovation, productivity, and consumption for decades to come. It's a tremendous window of opportunity for accelerated economic growth. However, harnessing this dividend isn't easy. It presents a significant challenge, the skill gap. Estimates suggested somewhere between 249 and 290 million people needed training by 2022. Annually, you have 12 million people joining the workforce, but India's total formal training capacity is only about 4.3 million. That leaves roughly 64% without formal skill development. And this is particularly problematic given that, as you know, 93% of the Indian workforce operates in the unorganized sector. Formal training there is largely absent. Reports suggest only about 2.5% of the unorganized workforce gets any formal skill development, compared to maybe 11% in the organized sector. So a big disparity. Despite these gaps, India has this ambitious vision, right, to become a worldwide hub for sourcing skilled labor. Projections even showed a potential surplus of 47 million skilled workers by 2020, even as other countries started facing shortages. So to bridge this gap, there's a crucial emphasis now on industry taking the lead. Moving skill development from just being a sort of CSR activity, corporate social responsibility, to being a core business strategy. We see this reflected in initiatives like industry-led sector skill councils, or SSCs, and things like the UDAN initiative for youth in Jammu and Kashmir, aiming to make 40,000 young people employable. International collaborations are also vital here. We're seeing partnerships with New Zealand, Germany borrowing their dual system model, South Korea with their Meister schools, Australia, the UK. And a notable one is the Technical Intern Training Program, the TITP, with Japan. It sends Indian trainees to Japan for 3 to 5 year internships. The expectation is they return and apply those acquired skills back home in India. It's a strategic, long-term play on human capital.
That's a fascinating look at the whole human capital equation. And it really underscores that India's growth isn't happening in isolation, is it? These international partnerships, especially with Japan, seem absolutely crucial for both the traditional infrastructure development we talked about and increasingly for these emerging high-tech sectors. I remember Union Minister Piyush Goyal once quite vividly described the India-Japan partnership as a unique fusion of sushi and spices, rooted in, you know, brotherhood, democracy, culture, and economic cooperation. Japan has certainly been a key ally, India's fifth largest source of FDI, right? Over $43 billion invested between 2000 and 2024. So beyond the big visible projects like the Mumbai-Ahmedabad high-speed rail and the metro systems in various cities, where else is this partnership really gaining traction now?
Well, the partnership is truly gaining serious traction in the absolutely critical semiconductor sector, which is, let's face it, the backbone in almost all modern technology. It's interesting because Japan was once a global leader here back in the 1980s, holding something like 50% market share. Now it's closer to 10%. India, meanwhile, under its Atmanirbhar Bharat, or Self-Reliant India Initiative, launched a modified semiconductor policy in 2021-22. The aim is to boost domestic capabilities in ATMP, that's assembly, testing, marking, and packaging, as well as chip design and manufacturing. The real potential game changer here seems to be a memorandum of cooperation and MASAFI signed between India and Japan in July 2023. It specifically focuses on a semiconductor supply chain partnership. This covers the whole gamut: design, manufacturing, equipment research, and, crucially, talent development. And we're already seeing tangible interest. Japanese companies like Rapidus, Denso, Kioxia, the Horiba Group, which is setting up a unit in Nagpur, they're expressing interest, some are investing. It indicates a genuine appetite for collaboration in this space. Now, it's really important to view this Japan partnership within the broader context of India's other significant semiconductor alliances, because they're building several. But Taiwan, for instance, we're seeing the first commercial semiconductor fab being opened by Tata Electronics in Gujarat. That's in partnership with Taiwan's Power Chip Semiconductor Manufacturing Corp, PSMC. It's a huge $11.1 billion investment.
TICES is also planning $100 million for chip design there. Then with the U.S. under the ICT program initiative on critical and emerging technologies, you have Micron Technology building a $2.75 billion ATMP plant in Sanan, Gujarat. Lam Research is also establishing R&D centers. And with South Korea, Simtek is setting up a production facility also in Sanan, Gujarat, with a $152.4 million investment. So India is really diversifying its partners here.
Okay, that's a really comprehensive web of high-tech alliances India is building. So given Japan's, you know, historical strength in this sector, but also its current reliance on others for some parts like design, what are the specific nuances or maybe the complex opportunities for India to further strengthen its semiconductor partnership with Japan? Perhaps in ways that are distinct from what we're seeing with partners like the U.S. or Taiwan.
That's a really insightful question, because while Japan has strong existing ties, obviously, with Taiwan, the U.S. and South Korean semiconductors, there are distinct opportunities for India. One key area for stronger collaboration, I think, should be joint ventures in semiconductor materials. Japan holds a dominant 56% global market share in critical materials. That's a huge strength. Similarly, in production equipment, Japan commands 32% of the global market. Companies like Tokyo Electron, TL, are top-tier global equipment makers, so there's immense potential for technology transfer there, especially in advanced materials like, say, photoresist coating. And leveraging Japan's deep expertise in node development, particularly sub-30 nanometer technology. Beyond the purely commercial, we should also look at fostering deeper academic and research collaborations, perhaps linking Indian institutions with places like Hiroshima University, which has strengths in this area, and maybe proactively promoting gender diversity in research within this very male-dominated sector. That could be a unique angle. Furthermore, India could strategically leverage the Free and Open Indo-Pacific, the FOIP framework, to foster broader technology collaboration with Japan, emphasizing those shared strategic interests in building resilient, secure supply chains. This approach makes the partnership less about direct competition with India's other alliances, like the U.S. or Taiwan, and more about carving out a unique complementary role that plays to Japan's specific strengths in materials and equipment.
So, pulling it all together, what does this all mean? We've really seen a snapshot today of an India experiencing an incredible transformation from its burgeoning economy and that massive infrastructure push, to its rapid commitment to renewable energy, its strategic approach to skilling its huge population, and its burgeoning high-tech collaborations, especially in semiconductors. It's clearly a complex, multifaceted story of growth and ambition. With both immense opportunities and, let's be honest, significant challenges ahead, it truly speaks to a nation actively trying to shape its own future on the world stage.
Absolutely. India's path isn't just about internal development anymore. It's critically about its growing role in global supply chains and its ability to harness both that immense demographic dividend and international partnerships effectively. The strategic integration of technology, talent, and infrastructure, getting those three things working together, that's the key to realizing its global ambitions. And we're seeing that play out right now in real time.
Right. So as India actively positions itself to be this global manufacturing and investment destination, balancing these incredibly ambitious targets with the crucial need for a highly skilled workforce. Here's a final thought for you, our listeners. What lessons or perhaps opportunities does this integrated approach connecting economy, infrastructure, energy, skills, and partnerships? What does it present for other nations, especially those navigating similar economic and technological shifts in our rapidly evolving world? It's certainly something to ponder as we continue to watch this incredible nation continue its trajectory.